Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crypto Market Rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the world of cryptocurrency, from the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the charts. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And man, what a volatile week we have had so far. The halving is over. The Hong Kong Bitcoin and Ethereum ETFs have been approved. And Bitcoin actually just cracked one of its major support levels as it is now breaking down below $60,000. So of course, we're going to break down this. We're going to break down everything that's happening and what you need to know in today's episode. But TiVo, how are you feeling over there? You know, a little bit of a scary price action, right? There's a lot of uncertainty as we head into such an important week with FOMC and interest rate talks and inflation and all these things.
Yeah, not the most fun week by any means. It seems like everything's all over the place. Obviously, today's Wednesday, so this will air tomorrow. Fed Powell will be speaking this afternoon, and it just seems like all markets, you know, hang on his every word during a press conference. So, yeah, nothing seems steady right now, in either direction.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely do. In last week's episode, really for the last couple of weeks, we were saying, hey, 60K is this key level. If we break this, we could definitely see some more downside into the mid to low 50s. And well, upon breaking it, we instantly fell from, you know, our $60,000 mark all the way down to almost 56K. And the truth of the matter is, and you know, we're going to look into this a little bit more when we check out the charts, is that we could actually go further. We could go further than that little low that we put in today of 56K. And I want to highlight some areas of, you know, what we can see. But I think the big takeaway here is that this is all pretty ordinary stuff. And to the average crypto listener out there, they're going to be like, ordinary, you know, what do you mean? We've fallen from 74K down to now 57K or 56K. We've almost fallen $20,000. How is this ordinary? Well, TiVo, you know, you have a pretty cool chart that you were actually showing to me before this. Just showing that this isn't any kind of an out of the ordinary move. Now, if you want to look at all the different visuals and charts and everything that we're going to be referencing on the screen here, and you're listening on Spotify or Audible or Apple Podcasts or anything like that, you need to check out the YouTube channel, because that's where we have all of the on-screen data and charts that we reference throughout all of these episodes. So again, you can check us out at the Crypto 101 Podcast on YouTube. But if you just want to listen in, that's fine as well.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
So this is a really cool chart that just showcases that this is actually the fourth 20% correction in Bitcoin during the last 12 months or over the last, you know, year. So, you know, what they highlight here is that this is pretty ordinary stuff. Again, we've seen several of these, and we've highlighted this as well in previous crypto rundowns. And what I mean by this is, if you go back to a couple episodes ago, we were looking at what the average retracement during a Bitcoin bull market is. And the truth here is that we see retracements of 15, 20, 30, sometimes 40% to the downside off of Bitcoin's high. In fact, it does this about a dozen times over the course of a market cycle. Now, this tweet here is talking about how we've already seen it happen four times. This would be the fourth one. Well, the truth of the matter is that if we're going to hold to that market standard, this could probably continue to happen quite a bit more. In fact, we could not only see more than four, it's likely that we see a number closer to 12. So is this going to be the first or the last pullback, rather? Probably not. This is probably on the closer end of the beginning than the like the end or the finish of this rally. And we're probably going to see a lot more, you know, whether it's 10, 15, 20, even 30 or 40% retracements. And that kind of goes back to that idea that we were talking about of, hey, this is ordinary stuff, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the market has to be over all of this. Now, am I shorting the market? Am I freaking out? Am I dumping my assets? Am I, you know, taking on leverage short positions? The answer there is no. The uptrend is still very much there. I mean, you have to look at the crypto markets, and I think this is a good time to kind of bring up the chart. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. But when we look at the crypto markets in their current state, we can see that they've been heading up for a long time over here. So let's go ahead and take a look at this. When we zoom out and we look at Bitcoin, we have been heading up since the bottom. You can see I have this drawn out over here. Since 2022, the market kind of reversed over here and we can see this. And ever since then, we bottomed out in 2022. We went up all of 2023, went up most of 2024, and now we're retracing a little bit. So I don't think that this is anything too crazy. Again, we've seen plenty of retracements. We saw one happen here and here and here and here, and now we're seeing another one happen over here. In fact, during a lot of these big retracements, you know where we pulled back to? It was the 200-day moving average. And that's what this yellow line is showing us over here. So again, we broke out, hit these new cycle highs, came back to the 200-day moving average, broke out to new cycle highs, back to the 200-day moving average. Actually fell a little bit below it over here. And so we did it once, we did it twice, we did it three times. This time we didn't get quite there, but again, there's some smaller pullbacks and some bigger ones. And then here we are in the current run, and we are on our way down over here. So we've broken the 20-day moving average. We've broken the 50-day moving average several times before, and it's been perfectly normal for Bitcoin. So I'm looking at this. Does it suck that the price action is going down? Yeah, it does, right? I think a lot of us, especially the altcoin holders, are feeling the pain of this pullback, because while Bitcoin from top to bottom over here is only down maybe 22%, we go to a lot of mainstream altcoins, and while they're sitting off, you know, quite a bit worse over here. You know, we go and we look at Optimism, which is off or down about maybe 48, almost 50% from the highs. I know a lot of people have been looking at Chainlink. Chainlink is down maybe 43% from the highs. We go and we look at, you know, what's another one? Let's look at maybe Celestia, one that was on people's mind for a while. This is another one that's down 55% from the highs. So the reoccurring theme over here is that a lot of altcoins are down between 40 and 50%. Even a coin that has been performing quite well like Solana is down about 40%. So there's that sweet spot where altcoins are once again performing at 2 to 3 times the rate of Bitcoin. Bitcoin drops 20%. Altcoins are down between 40, 50, maybe 60% for the lower performer ones. And that's a typical thing to see. So if we go back to the Bitcoin chart over here, we did break down, right? We did kind of see this deeper move. And with this red candle, you know, I'm repping the red shirt today to kind of represent the market. I like to always don this shirt when we have a little bit of a nasty price movement. And it's been a while, but I think today was deserving of it. And so, you know, again, the key level or the key reason for kind of bringing all this up is that this 60K support line, really, no matter how we drew it over here, you can see I have this rising support level, I have this falling support level. No matter how you want to draw this, it's broken. 59K to 60K broke, and then this is the deeper breakdown. So the number one question on everyone's mind here is, you know, Brendan, Tivo, where could we go to next? And it's going to go back to that topic that we talked about earlier, saying, hey, it's entirely possible that we go to either A, the 200-day moving average, or B, one of our previous consolidation zones. Now, it just so happens to be that these two are really close to one another. And so if we zoom out on this chart just a little bit, we can see that the previous consolidation zone begins around 53K and goes down to the high 40s, or really all throughout the 40s. So this creates a block for where Bitcoin is likely to bottom from. Now, I think the biggest forms of support on Bitcoin are going to be right between the high 50s in the low 40s. This is going to be where consolidation starts kicking in, previous levels, but also the 200-day moving average is going to be right around here. So I think that this is going to kind of be the sweet spot where if there's going to be any big bounce for Bitcoin, I think that's where it's going to be. Now, can we chop around in the meantime? Yes, but I am looking for a little bit lower of price action here. And I think that's okay. And we've been emphasizing quite a bit of caution as we have been up here. We've talked about what the bulls need to do. Well, the bulls failed here. So that means that we can go a little bit lower in the short term. And we like to call this the slip, the dip, and eventually, ideally, the rip. So I think that's exactly what we're kind of looking at here. A little bit of downtrend. And this is something that could realistically last maybe a month, 2 months' time. We've seen this happen in a lot of the previous halving cycles, where if we zoom out to some of those charts, and I'll kind of briefly just flash them up on the screen here. When we zoom out to some of these, let's get this right. And we go all the way back over here. Well, there are these choppy periods where it gets nasty. We go down for a couple of months at a time. We saw this happen in 2020. I mean, heck, we saw this happen all the way back in 2016, rather, where we had this really nasty pullback after the halving. We had the first dump, the second dump. We chopped around for a couple of months, and then we took off parabolic again. We saw it even back in 2012. There's a lot of nasty price action around the time of the halving, where we chopped around for a couple months' time. So that's why I'm looking at this and I'm saying, hey, we could really move sideways or even down slash sideways for a couple of months here. Wouldn't freak me out too much, but I still believe that no matter what kind of choppy, nasty price action that we get as we kind of maybe consolidate downwards, I think we're eventually going to rally out of this. And I still think the idea of new all-time highs are on the table. I still think Bitcoin can break above 75K. I still think it can reach the 80Ks. However, now that support is broken, I am being a little bit more conservative. You know, I'm being a little bit more hesitant about just shotgun approaching, throwing money into anything here. I think this is somewhere where we have to be a little bit more strategic. And so I am actually really excited to buy the dip over here. I think a lot of people have been excited to buy the dip. And we're finally getting a reasonable opportunity to do that when Bitcoin isn't coming off an all-time high, right? When it's not sitting up there above 70, above 60K, we're getting a true pullback of 20%+. And that's going to give people a lot of opportunity because while Bitcoin is down 20% from the highs, altcoins are down, like we said, 40, 50, 60% from the highs. And so people who have been wanting to get in the altcoins but felt like they were too high, well, now they're down almost 50% across the board, and they're going to get an opportunity to do that, just like the Bitcoin and the Ethereum hodlers who have been wanting to accumulate more have been wanting to do that as well. So I hope that kind of answers the question of, like, you know, I've seen a lot of people asking, why isn't Bitcoin pumping after the halving? And the truth of the matter, as we saw from some of those charts earlier, is that Bitcoin typically doesn't go parabolic right after the halving happens. In fact, it's more realistic to see it chop around and see some nasty price action for a couple of months and then go parabolic in the months to the, you know, roughly about a year, year and a half after the halving is when it really feels the full effects, tops out. And so I still think we got a long time. And again, it's not anything that is too crazy over here. Now, Tivo, one of the cool things that you showed me and you brought to my attention was what's happening on the Bitcoin Lightning Network. And I think we can kind of throw up that graphic. And so for people who aren't familiar, you know, Bitcoin's network, especially around the time of this halving, has been going crazy. And so what do I mean by that? Well, at the time of the halving, there was this new kind of like event, this new kind of token coming out called runes. And what runes are essentially like fungible tokens, like altcoins on Bitcoin's main chain. And it caused a ton of activity and backlog, and transactions were taking forever and they were costing a lot of money. And this comes into the idea of using something like the Bitcoin Lightning Network, where things are going to be a little bit more efficient than the Bitcoin main chain when there's ordinals and BRC20 tokens and runes and all these stuff, making it slower and more expensive. And so Coinbase just added support for the Bitcoin Lightning Network. This is something that I think Kraken and some other exchanges and other platforms have had support for a while now, but it creates a more efficient way of kind of handling the times that we're in. And so, you know, just like we have layer twos for Ethereum, we also kind of have like these layer twos for Bitcoin, right? So like the Lightning Network. And I think that's important for anyone that's out there and looking to make transactions. Again, it is a little bit different from the Bitcoin main chain. But the Lightning Network, if you're trying to get from point A to point B and not do anything too crazy, it could be an option for you, especially if you are a Coinbase user. So, I mean, yeah, TiVo, a lot happening in the markets as we kind of took a look at it over here. I don't know if you have any thoughts about, you know, kind of the current state of how things are transpiring, but I'd love to open the floor.
Yeah, man. Well, I think we called it. We didn't cut a clip from past episode, but leading up to the halving, I think I said it. I was like, hey, I wouldn't be shocked if there was kind of a sell the news event because of all the traders. And, you know, as much as everybody loves the Bitcoin ETF and it gives so much more exposure to the traditional markets, it's like a lot of those people are traders. And, you know, like we've talked about again and again, a lot of these people don't necessarily believe in the long term viability of Bitcoin. They just see the trade in it. And, you know, if you compound that with the macro and J-PAL and, you know, the Bitcoin ETF giveth, the Bitcoin ETF taketh away. So I think the momentum on that side of the thing, on that side of the fence from January till now, you know, the Bitcoin ETF momentum has faded. We're going to talk about the Hong Kong ETF. Maybe didn't come in as hard as we would have liked. Yeah, just like, again, like what we said in the beginning, there's a lot going on right now. And from a larger, you know, zoom out perspective, you're not really sure, you know, which way this thing's going from a macro level, you know, economic outlook picture.
Yeah. You know, we talked about this in last week's episode about the Hong Kong ETFs. A lot of people were acting like it was going to be the next miracle that sends Bitcoin to new all-time highs, new 100K, you know, but we basically said it's just not the case. It's extremely unlikely that we see this monumental move off of the Hong Kong ETFs. And the truth of the matter is that they actually underperformed pretty significantly. There was all these predictions out there saying that, hey, we're expecting to see $300 million in inflows on the first day of these, you know, Ethereum and Bitcoin ETFs. And collectively, we, you know, as you can see on the screen here, they did 12.8 million. They did almost $13 million when they were expected to do 300 million. And that's what the prediction as or was. And so they extremely underperformed. And again, I think it goes back to this idea of people were giving them false hype. I think if you look at the size of the Hong Kong ETF markets and what we were expecting here, I mean, honestly, I think that maybe 50 to 100 would have been more reasonable. But seeing only 13, not even 13 million is a little bit on the lower side. And so, again, this is one of the things that we talked about in last week's episode saying, hey, don't get your hopes up about this. It's positive, right? We're seeing global adoption. We're seeing interest. We're seeing the standard of Ethereum ETFs become more relevant and prevalent. And so that's all great. But we're saying, you know, if you are counting on this being this monumental all-time high kind of event, you might be a little bit let down. And that's the truth. And so now it's kind of played out. And again, we always like to keep it honest with all of our listeners. Again, that might not be the most hyped up, bullish, popular belief out there saying, hey, these ETFs from Hong Kong could be cool, but maybe a little bit of a letdown from a price perspective. But it's the truth. And again, we like to keep it real with everyone. So it's unfortunate that they kind of underperformed the expectations. Again, I still think it's a good thing, right? We have people over there that now get exposure. It proves that people around the world want to get exposure to Bitcoin and Ethereum. Them approving the Ethereum one just kind of goes to show that it's probably going to be the start of the adoption process for Ethereum ETFs around the world. And I think there's a lot of good things that come out of it. However, you know, from an inflows perspective, the good news is that it's not just a one-day thing. You know, yeah, the first day might have been a little bit lower than we wanted, but the good thing is that these things are going to be around for years. And so even if they do 13, I mean, heck, even if they're doing $5 million a day, right? They're doing a third of that. If they're doing $5 million a day, every day for the next couple of years, it begins to add up, right? We start getting into hundreds of millions at that point, and then eventually billions. And then we have the United States ETFs, and it all starts compounding over time. And so the more of the world and the more people that can have exposure, it's a good thing to kind of look at. Now, in funny news, TiVo, I love that you brought this up. This is floating around Twitter. In fact, some of you listeners might have seen this. But Tebow, I want to hand you over the reins to this one because I know that this is kind of your golden goose, but I'm excited to dive into this chart, or rather this list.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, Forbes Research published a list of 20 crypto billion-dollar zombies. This is their words, not ours, because actually a couple of these, a couple of these have been on the show before. So I just want to preface, which this is not our call. This is Forbes. So these are L1s with high valuation, but are unproven and have little utility other than speculative crypto trading. And here's the list. Obviously, on the top, XRP. We know
that is going to anger so many people. Tebow, you have the XRP army coming for your head just for
some. No, not me. They might be coming for you. I've heard you say some things over the years. and then Litecoin. I'm just a couple off the top here. ICP, Internet Computer, Theta. I know we've had Theta on before. And those are the Tezos. Tezos is one that sticks out.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I think that we've at least talked about before, like in the sense of, maybe either had on or discussed in possible newsletters of new things. And I think you got to take it with a grain of salt. So my takeaway is I agree with this, the idea of like, oh, wow, there's a lot of money in these things, but there's also a lot of money in Doge. There's a lot of money in Bowdoin and Dog Whiff Hat. So there's billions of dollars in a ton of other projects that also, might not bring much value. But at the same time, I think a lot of these are actually working towards something. Now, whether you agree with what they're working towards or not, that's a different debate. But, to call them zombie projects, all of them, the group 20 in that list, I think might be a little heavy. But I don't know. I thought it was interesting. What I would like to see is Forbes publish, the 20 we picked them 10 years ago picks that, did really well. Like if you're only going to shit on the space, why don't you give us some winners too,
Yeah. This is the kind of article where it's like, all right, the market's falling. So we're going to publish this kind of like hit piece almost.
Grave dancing.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't surprise me. It's typical news fashion, right? But I like how they give a little bit of a reason, right? They have that comment section where they're saying, hey, this is why we put them inside of here. And then if you go through the full length of this, they give like a long, more in-depth review of like, hey, this is why this cryptocurrency is inside of this list. And I have to say, there are some on here that I genuinely agree with. Like EOS is on here. Completely agree with that. There's a few others. Again, not going to ruffle too many feathers. Not saying I agree with the XRP one, but I agree with it. not in the sense, right? They have a very vibrant community. There's a lot happening over there. Is it a zombie chain? No, I don't think that's quite the right word. But I get the perspective that they're coming from. Now, we've interviewed quite a few projects that are building on ICP. It was one that I was not a giant fan of in the past, but I have to say they've been warming up to me because we've been interviewing projects and different people. And there's genuinely people building real products on top of ICP, which I think shows that it's not really a zombie chain or something like that. And I think the same goes for Stacks. We've seen the Bitcoin ecosystem be getting so built out, and Stacks is at the forefront of doing that, right? We talked about BRC20 tokens. We talked about Ordinals. We talked about Runes. We talked about all these other kinds of activity in DeFi that is coming to Bitcoin. And Stacks is like one of the most prominent forefront leading projects when it comes to the Bitcoin layer 2 ecosystem or the expansive Bitcoin ecosystem. So I don't think that they deserve to be on there as well. And I think that there's a couple, and maybe zombie was not the right word for that list. I think that they probably could have worded it a little bit differently, but it just goes to show that there are a lot of projects out there that you got to be careful of. There's a lot of projects that are big. They're billion-dollar market caps, like some of the ones that we looked at, and they might not be in the best position. And I think ultimately, you can look at price performance to kind of use as a bit of an indicator. If you are reading the fundamentals, and maybe the fundamentals have you convinced, but if you look at the price performance and it's just bad and it's getting outperformed by the vast majority of the rest of the market and it's not seeing constant new highs and it's not forming higher lows, it's just going to lower highs, lower lows, the thing's falling, it's being outperformed by most of its competitors, well then, if the fundamentals are blinding you, look at the technicals. If there's no good price performance there, then you might not want to have your money in it in the first place. And so I think that's something that a lot of people need to kind of reassess, especially for some of the picks on that list, because there were, you know, several of the picks on that list that its token price just has not been doing well. And I think that's a big contributing factor as to why they might have been labeled as like a zombie project, because I doubt that if, you know, if there was a token on that list that was just skyrocketing and seeing new all-time highs and it was just outperforming most of the market, it wouldn't have been on that list. But a lot of those tokens were on that list because they hadn't been seeing new all-time highs, right? They haven't been kind of seeing these massive growths. And again, I'm not speaking for all of them, but there were some of them on there. And I think that's just a good practice, right? We're at the stage of the market where I think you can like just need to unbiasedly look at your portfolio and say, all right, what has performed in the first little part of this market cycle and what hasn't? And I already know that a lot of people are going to say, well, this coin typically performs better, you know, later on in the market cycle. It's typically a late performer. And people always justify positions by saying that. It's the one that I hear the most out of anything, Tebow, is people always bringing up, oh, well, it's a late performer. It's a late bloomer. It's like, no, at that point, you're just making excuses. And I think that that's a rather poor excuse, if you ask me. But I'm going to digress there. I think that that is an interesting list. Don't completely agree with it, but I think that there is a little bit of knowledge that we could probably take away from it, even if your coin, you know, was or was not on that list.
I have a fun segment that we did not put on the list here, but it goes off what you're saying of gathering knowledge. I feel like we're at an inflection point of the first, you know, part of the year here, right? Big run up ETFs. And now, you know, everybody, I mean, we were all talking about, you know, hey, you know, we could, you know, take a little bit of a correction here, but up higher, up more, up higher. And now we're kind of like, well, like now, you know, we still believe in the long-term thesis, but it's a little bit more, you know, hairy. Are there any lessons learned from, you know, how this, the beginning of this cycle or wherever you want to call the market cycle in your own mind, you know, what have you learned from maybe something that you didn't learn in the past, like something new? And I think I'll go first. So I'll give you an example. So the number one thing that I learned was, it's, you know, history doesn't always repeat itself, but it rhymes. And so, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, Bitcoin goes first, then L2s, then, you know, small caps, and then meme coins. And it felt like this one, this time was different because of the ETFs, and Bitcoin was such a big leader. And while altcoins, we always talked about that Bitcoin dominance, right? It never truly fell for a true altcoin season to really fly high. But at the same time, there were a lot of, so if you take away the altcoin season that wasn't there, there was still the meme coin season was absolutely wild. And then on top of that, you know, we didn't really get quite to Coinbase number one on the App Store, but we started seeing the rise of that. You know, we had a friend call me on the show. And so like these were like local top signals that maybe, because we didn't see it play out how we had in the past, that you're just kind of like, oh, well, that's cool that it's happening this fast, but like we're not there yet. We're not there yet. And I thought it was a good, fun way to learn like a different approach and a different way to look at things that, again, didn't look the same, but definitely rhymed.
Yeah, you know, for me, I'd probably say maybe twofold. Number one, don't underestimate the power of the masses. Specifically when it comes to the meme coin space, you know, I've been pretty vocal for as long as I've been around on YouTube. You know, I think it's been about, man, almost 7 years now, 7-8 years. And I've never been big in the meme coins. Again, I don't knock people for them. I think that there's money to be made there. I think one of my biggest takeaways from this cycle is that if there are millions and millions of people that are genuinely interested in building these things out and putting their hard-earned money and they're pumping them on social media, like that is almost its own ecosystem and validation. And although it's not what I am personally used to, it doesn't mean that it's bad. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. And I think that that's one of the takeaways for me, is that even though some things may be a little bit outside of my comfort zone and what I'm used to, I think that I can still get exposure to a space like that. Now, I think it has to be done strategically. I probably have to change a little bit of my daily processes. But looking at how the meme coin industry just exploded kind of going into this year, you look at Dog Whip Hat, you look at a lot of these other ones that are on Solana and the Base network and with Runes, there's a lot of opportunity there. And so I think being a little bit more open-minded isn't a bad thing as well. Also, I think some of the big takeaways is that a lot of the newer tokens are being the better performers. You know, I found myself in the past just wanting to get all these legacy tokens from the last cycle and maybe not getting enough exposure to newer tokens on this cycle. And so that's something that I've been actively trying to kind of recognize and correct as well. And then I think the third one for a lot of people is taking profit is a good and necessary part here. I think it's easy to get caught up in the bull market. And don't get me wrong, I was taking my profits, but I think we can always look at this and say, okay, maybe I could have taken a little bit more profits. Maybe I was being a little bit greedy, because at the end of the day, profit is profit. And you know, greed strikes hard in the crypto market. So I think that's something that a lot of people are going to look at. You know, I know that if I struggle with that as someone who even took profits, I'm looking back at it now saying, hey, I probably, even though I took profits, I probably could have taken more, right? I could have been safer in this approach, especially as Bitcoin did things that we've never seen before. You know, it broke out to all-time highs before the halving and stuff like that. That probably could have been used as a signal, because historically speaking, whenever Bitcoin shoots past all-time highs, that's usually my first profit taking signal. And so again, I'm not taking off the whole portfolio or anything like that. But when we blew through up to like 74K, I probably should have taken a little bit more off. Again, not anything crazy. It's not an all or nothing behavior.
No lie, dude. When Bitcoin broke all-time highs that early with like the ETF, I was like, dude, this thing's going to a million. Yeah. I was like, people aren't ready. The euphoria is about to hit.
And it's very possible that it could have, right? But coulda, shoulda, woulda. And it just didn't show that.
And it's all timing too. I agree. Like, if the macro was a little bit different minus the inflation, I mean, that's Monday morning quarterback to the nth degree. But if the macro wasn't where it was and that all lined up, that same scenario, like, I mean, there's no reason why it wouldn't keep rocketing, I think, if the macro wasn't as unsturdy. And you know, the last segment that we're going to do is Jay Powell. But yeah, I think, you know, we're not crazy to have thought that in the moment. Like, it's Monday morning quarterback. Oh crap, we're down 25%. Wish I took more profits. Like, yeah, sure. That's exactly what a quarterback says in the film room on Monday when he threw a pick six. Like, damn, shouldn't have threw it there.
Yeah, agreed. And I think you're right about a lot of the macro movements of what's happening in the traditional market. And I think we can probably segue into that. But like, there's a lot of uncertainty happening here. So for people that aren't aware, the U.S. has been hiking rates for almost like, I mean, what is it, like 4 years now, going off COVID essentially. And so we've just been hiking and hiking and hiking, and it's been aggressive because inflation was so bad. It was up at like 10%, and we've been trying to get that back down. And we are going into this year, and the Fed was saying, hey, we've been hiking for a while. It's been super aggressive. We've seen inflation kind of coming down from 10%, closer to like 3.5%. And things looked like they were getting better. Well, we kick off this year and inflation's not getting better anymore. And they're saying, the Fed was saying, hey, we're probably going to do 3 rate cuts to make things a little bit more reasonable for the average person out there. Well, now we're looking at it, and from some of our past CPI reports and inflation reports and FOMC events, we're realizing that inflation is actually getting worse again, and that we're at a worse place this year. That was one of the last things that we learned, is that we're at a worse place right now than we were a year ago. And so, you know, why would we, the Fed starting to ask themselves and kind of bring this into discussion, why would we cut rates if inflation is worse off today than it was a year ago? And so people are starting to speculate that Jerome Powell and the Fed and a lot of these people are not only going to take the idea of rate cuts off the table, or maybe decrease it from 3 to 2 to 1, maybe it could be 0, but you know, they could be off the plate entirely. And that scares a lot of people, because everyone was saying, hey, we've been aggressively hiking for so long. Everyone was dying for these rate cuts and excited about them. And that's a big reason that I think the markets were kind of moving forward. And if that gets yanked away from us, what we're seeing is that that directly affects on-risk assets. That means stocks. That means crypto. That means a lot of the things that are in these same boats. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword in this, in the sense that it doesn't make any sense, right, to sell something like Bitcoin, to sell something like Ethereum, if inflation is getting worse, because you're selling into the dollar. You're selling into the very asset that just got stated that its inflation rate is rising. And so I think there's a lot of people out there going, that doesn't make any sense that people would sell Bitcoin for the dollar if it gets announced that the dollar's inflation rate has gotten worse. And I get where they're coming from. I think that the way that this factors in is how inflation and CPI and stuff like that directly affects the US economy, and how that would then trickle down from, you know, we have inflation, then CPI, then the US economy, then we have earnings calls, then we have, you know, overall economy growth, then we have jobs, and it kind of trickles out down from there. And so people want to get out of on-risk assets. I say people, mainly like the larger institutions, the big fish in the sea. They're the ones who want to get out of these on-risk assets. And it's a little bit of a frustrating cycle. And so when we look at like what's happened over here in the last 4 years, I mean, the US has lost 25% of its purchasing power since 2020, and inflation is a real issue. And the Fed, I think, is starting to become nervous. Like they've been hiking and they can't get it under control. And so there's all these uncertainties. And that's the reason that I bring it up, is because there's a lot of FUD. There's a lot of uncertainty out there about what could happen in this week's Fed chair speaking, and also in the FOMC event that I believe is happening today at the time of recording this, closer to like 2 o'clock. And so we're going to find out soon, you know, maybe by the time this is posted or by the time that a lot of you are watching this, we're already going to have our answer. But a lot of people were looking at the last time that Jerome Powell spoke, a lot, you know, the last time that we had an event like this, and he kind of bounced around the idea of being like, of talking about the current situation and what his plan was to do. And people, that's what made people scared. And so this time around, I think people are looking at it and they're saying he can't just bounce around anymore. He has to address it. Are we going to see the rate cuts that they told us about, or is he pivoting from that plan? And I think the worst case scenario of what could happen is he announced that they're pivoting away from 3 rate cuts. And if he comes out and says that they are doing no rate cuts or doing rate hikes again, I think that, you know, likely what we'll see here, and again, we'll see what happens. I hope this doesn't happen. But if we get either of those two scenarios, then the markets could probably see some more downside, because I think that's not what people want to hear. And so we're probably going to get some volatility today. Fingers crossed he comes out and still says that there's some sort of a plan of cuts, whether that's 3, whether that's 2, whether that's 1. I think that that could all still be decent news, but he's in a hard spot because inflation and stuff is getting worse. So it's a complicated matter, TiVo. It really is. And we were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah, it's, I mean, first of all, politics aside, I think Mr. Jerome Powell actually holds himself amazingly in these press conferences. He's well spoken, he's to the point. And then there's this press conference. So he comes out and says what he wants to say, like, here's the minutes of the meeting, here's what we've decided to do. And then there's a press conference, and you know, these, you know, collection of Hollywood Squares reporters get to try to give him gotcha questions. And I really am not a fan of that, because the market hangs on every word this guy says, which seems a little ridiculous sometimes. And so, you know, I agree with you. There's a lot that we're looking to hear from him, but I think because he's so well-spoken and handles himself so well, that, you know, what we're looking for is, we know there's not going to be a cut here. There's not going to be a raise. So the Fed's not going to do anything today. Looking forward, you know, I think his mantra is, we're looking at the data. So I think he sticks to that pretty much to a T. The worst case scenario is if he says the data is not going in our favor as we hope. So the conversations more and more are, you know, is the next move up or down? If he says that the Fed is now questioned, because he basically came out and said the next move we believe will be down. And if he pivots and says, now we're debating on what the next move will be, then it's a bloodbath. I mean,
I agree.
We're probably like 3% down in the stock market. I don't know what that would do to crypto, but probably 8 to 10, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right. And yeah, a lot's riding on this. So we'll find out here soon. You know, we just want to, again, bring it up because this is the kind of thing that could likely affect all on-risk assets. As silly as it is that it could affect the crypto markets, which are global and decentralized and should be fighting against inflation, I think that they do. I truly believe that they do in the long term, but there's still a lot of emotional reaction from the institutional side, from the big investors, and they're going to play things the same way that they have been for their entire lifetime. And so this is how they know how to react to this kind of news. And we'll see. Again, does it concern me for the long term of crypto? Absolutely not. Literally not sweating a single minute about it, not losing an hour of sleep over it. But we're just saying, hey, in the short term here, depending on what's said, depending on, you know, what's kind of happening with Bitcoin, there's a lot of stuff to watch out for. And again, the downside move might not necessarily be over. Again, we can kind of probably see a little bit of a deeper move, but those are the moves where I'm excited to buy the dip, and I'm genuinely ready to kind of jump in and not only accumulate some Bitcoin down here, but strategically some well-performing altcoins as well. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity probably in the coming month or two, maybe even in the coming weeks here, depending on what happens this afternoon. But a lot of stuff that we're watching out for, and you better believe we're going to keep all of you in the loop as well.
Buckle up, because it should be an interesting afternoon. But like you said, long term, we'll keep pushing forward. We'll keep moving on. But you know, these are the things that are going on, and you know, hope you enjoy us kind of breaking it down, because there's a lot that is affecting all the markets right now. So
yeah, I mean, this is a time to be vigilant. It's a time to watch closely. It's not a time to be getting into super risky positions. If you're looking at that speculative altcoin that you've been eyeing up for a week now, it might not be the best time for that. It might be the, you know, a better time to be a little bit more safe. And so it's okay to maybe DCA on some Bitcoin, maybe some Ethereum, maybe some like mainstream well-performing altcoins. But you know, the way that I kind of view this time is I'm being patient. You know, I'm being hesitant. I've been wanting to buy the dip on crypto, but we just haven't got a lot of confirmation yet. And that's one of the big things that I'm looking for over here is that, you know, yeah, I might add some of the bigger positions, some of the more safer ones, and DCA a little bit. But I'm also, again, just being patient, sitting on the sidelines, been trying to keep that powder that I've been waiting to use ready to go for a time like this one. And I think we're almost there. But needless to say, everyone, there's a lot happening in the markets. Again, you better believe that we're going to keep all of you updated with everything that's happening. So if you like this episode and you want to tune in to more stuff like this, well, we got a lot of great content that's coming your way. Again, you can go over to the Crypto 101 podcast YouTube channel, and you can see that we have all sorts of tutorials for exchanges, for wallets, for trading, for different like cryptocurrency websites. We also have the Crypto 101 podcast, and we have all these great resources that you can get directly plugged in on through YouTube and a lot of other stuff as well. So check out the links in the description down below. Thank you all for watching, and we're going to see all of you the same time, same place next week.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.